Welcome to Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. I'm Janaea, and I'm your co-host, and with me is Alan.
Hello.
Hi, welcome. We're going to be with you from 2 until 5, and I've got a great program lined up for you. For the first hour, from 2 to 3, we'll be speaking with White Eagle about the council guide training that are part of the Delicate Lodge teachings. And I'll say a lot more about that. And then from 3 to 4, we're going to be speaking with the Raging Grannies, our local Santa Cruz group. And then from 4 to 5, about working with the seventh generation, working with our youth and helping them, guiding them in a world of violence into a world of peace with Monique and Jonah. But right now, I want to introduce you to White Eagle. White Eagle, hi, are you with us? White Eagle? Whoops, let's see. White Eagle.
Now I can hear
Hi,
you.
Hi, now we can hear you.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's an honor to have you. It really is. And Alan, my co-host, is also here with us. But before we get started, I just want to let our listeners know a little bit about you and who you are and why it's such an honor to have you on with us. White Eagle is a Métis, that's a mixed blood medicine keeper of the origin teachings of the Delicate Lodge, and that's a body of teachings that moved through ancient cultures indigenous to the Americas. She has spent 13 years in apprenticeship incorporating, mastering, and now teaching this ancient body of medicine knowledge with the founders of Ihama Institute, taking responsibility to assist in again creating cultures of harmony and respect for all of life. And her journey has actually included building and fostering circles of people gathering around this wisdom in Europe, the United Kingdom, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, and here in the U.S. And her work assists self-development, healing, and connection to the hoop of life. And this is accomplished through her fostering of community circles of training, personal ceremonies on the earth with individuals in healing ceremonies. It is such an honor to have you on. And can you tell us a little bit about the origin of the Delicate Lodge teachings?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The first thing I want to say is that, of course, as in all old cultures, a lot of this is held in the myth. And, of course, for us, we understand that myth is based in fact. So in our myth, we are told that this culture, the Delicate Lodge teachings, came through the Mayan tradition a long time ago. The Mayan people were in a time of upheaval, in a way, and this tradition was brought in by an amazing teacher they knew as Quetzalcoatl. And he was known as the Peacekeeper. And so he came into that culture and was very instrumental in shifting, helping to shift the culture for a while into one of peace. Instead of using certain kinds of sacrifice, they used flowers and butterflies instead, which we still do today when we put flowers on our dinner tables or anything. In a way, you could perceive that there is these living beings called flowers that have given their life for our blessing of beauty.
Yes.
And so then the Mayan culture, there was another time of upheaval in which the warrior clan took over again. And so there was some great priestesses in those days that left there. Many of the men were being killed because of war. And they left and they began to head north. And two of them, Flies Crow and Temple Doors, ended up in the United States eventually, and both of them founded large cultures, one at the mouth of the Mississippi River Valley and one at Chaco Canyon. And both of them were keepers or carriers or priestesses in those days, they were called, of this tradition based on the understanding of the sacred 20 count and many other medicine wheels in this bundle that teach us about how humans can be a part of life, harmonious with it, and live as guardians for this beautiful hoop that we live in. So the tradition itself, it passed through different keepers over time, over hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So you could say it never really belonged to any tribe. Most of the keepers of this tradition were actually outcasts of their own tribes, because this tradition absolutely makes sure that there is no power structure that can exist where one person is telling everybody else what to do. It's based on the circle and the way of the council, in which everyone in the tribe has equal voice. So you can imagine it takes a little more time to come to an idea of what to do when everybody gets to have a voice, but people understood that it was vitally important to take the time to do that. And again, power structures where they're basically in design seen as a pyramidal power structure where one person is on top,
yes,
and a lot of other people are, you know, down below them on different levels. It's still the way we have our government today. It's the way that we have our organizations, and these things in nature do not work. They're not sustainable. So many of the people that carried this tradition lived outside their tribes and mm-hmm. have traveled through many different tribes. There are many different keepers of different lineages mm-hmm. over hundreds, even thousands of years. And then eventually it moved up into Canada and through some teachers there, some women at that point, and then into a Cheyenne man who also carried this tradition, and then into Rainbow Hawk and Wendigo, who were my teachers, and then they made a keeper out of me. So that's how it traveled, and it's an amazing body of knowledge filled with actually all the information we need right now for the times that we're facing. So,
in this time of crisis that we spoke about briefly on the phone yesterday,
yes, exactly,
too, and how appropriate it is, and it brings one back to the importance of the moment and seizing it, and overcoming fear and anger, and coming to a place of gratitude and love and true appreciation. And you said it so much more eloquently.
No, that was pretty good.
But this, you know, so you talk about this journey that we're all living in, and that it's time during this period of crisis to shift this, and these teachings embody a way to do that. And I was on your website looking at the values that are embraced by the teachings, and they're so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go over those a little bit?
Well, the values themselves are the same values that many very beautiful and old spiritual traditions have held. The basis of understanding that we honor all of life, and we honor the masculine and feminine in all of life, and that we honor each other and our differences.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically meant to protect the ground of birth and growth of new ideas, new understandings that live in harmony mm-hmm. with the rest of life, because we've moved out of that. Now, we moved out of an understanding of how to live at one with our earth and all of our other children, the birds and the plants and the waters and the clouds and the stone people. We forgot how important it was to remember that we are one with them a while back, a long time ago. And we've been learning what we have to learn, so that we're now poised in a beautiful time of human history when we are beginning to remember again. And we have some amazing gifts, some amazing things that we have learned along the way mm-hmm. that can help us live those values. I was having a conversation with a young man yesterday, somebody that I had in a vision quest recently.
Yes.
And one of his struggles was that he works in the world with technology. And he had had a dream in which he was standing before a window, and he had a device, like a technological device, in one hand.
Mm.
And the window was in front of him, and he couldn't open the window without putting the device down.
Uh-huh.
But the device was supposed to open the window, and it didn't work.
Oh, dear.
So it was a dream about this war he was in, of the part of him that understood that he was a child of the earth, and yet there's this technology that he lives a great part of and has been taught is in some ways evil. But you see, the Mother Earth never intended us to believe that we were evil.
Yeah. She
gave us some amazing gifts of innovation and ways to keep growing the things that we create in order to learn how to be a better guardian for her and for all of us. And, of course, in a way, we had to misuse these things to find out how dangerous they could be.
Yeah.
And we are waking up. People all over this planet are waking up right now and realizing what's been created and the damage that we have done, and it's not too late.
And particularly with the Gulf oil disaster.
Yes, that's a perfect example. I mean, it's going to hugely change a lot of things about the way we live our lives and how we do things. It's impacted nature at a huge scale, probably in the end bigger than anything has in our recent memories. And yet, it's in one way what we need to wake up to realize what can happen. And this is just one oil well. They're all over the place.
I know it.
You know, so it's a great wake-up call. And I'm not on any level saying that it's a good thing it happened. It's a tragedy.
No.
And our job now is to learn from it and begin to make the changes we have to make to go back to a simpler life in which we don't need these kind of resources, where we can create a life where the resources that are always available to us and always renewing themselves, if we tend them and care for them, are going to be a part of what we're going to use.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very not beautiful thing, and at the same time, it's coming at the perfect time for many people to awaken. And there's many people in our country right now that are, because of this experience,
yes,
because of what's happening to them and the rest of the world, given what's going on, that are beginning to take it pretty seriously.
The agony and the grief, the reality, they can really see how the mother has been mistreated and
sure,
the abuse. And you spoke also about the sixth sun,
right,
in this time, in
mm-hmm,
the Mayan tradition.
Yeah.
Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well,
why it's so timely?
Yeah, In the calendar, everybody talks about 2012, and there's a lot of different ideas about what that really means. And the way we hold it is that there's like four gateways or four doorways to the great turning, the shift. And I don't care if you look at it in the sense of quantum physics, or if you look at it from a perspective of geology, or if you want to look at it from a spiritual perspective, the story is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
There are changes that are happening to this great hoop of life, what we call a hoop of life, which is our solar system, our beautiful, life-giving solar system.
Yes.
And all the things that are in it. And in 1991, according to the prophecies from a long time ago, people were pretty smart back then,
they
called the age of the fifth sun died in 1991. And the fifth sun was, you could translate that into a culture of war. And meaning that was a time when all these pyramidical structures I was talking about earlier got created and
yes,
thrived in some ways, because they were good at controlling people. They were really good at producing things and making lots of money and all of that. But none of them have been sustainable. And you can look at the top the companies in the world, 15 years ago, and look at who's top now, and it's not the same. They're not sustainable.
They're crumbling.
Yeah. So that was the first gateway. There's four gateways on this real shift in consciousness for us on this planet. And I'm talking about a human shift in consciousness. Everything is shifting, but the humans are as well.
And you can feel it, too.
You bet. So the sixth sun, in other words, was gestating since 1991, wasn't fully born. And,
mm-hmm,
and a week from this last Sunday, it came fully into being. And the sixth sun is the gateway sun of peace and enlightenment, the true energy of change on this planet for the humans and for everything, of course, where there's a new wisdom available to us. And this wisdom is one of kindness and love and peace and harmony and
mm-hmm,
serenity for those who are open to it. And,
mm-hmm,
and by that I mean those who are ready to stop living that old culture of dominion over the earth and each other, of seeing what is not perfect, of judging others, of being afraid, because fear is what's under the surface of everything in that culture of the fifth sun.
And then that fosters greed.
You bet. It fosters everything. Fear is what allows us to try to find a way to be safe, so we start padding ourselves, we isolate ourselves from each other and other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
We begin to see the bad boogeyman everywhere, and we quit looking for what is beautiful and perfect, mm-hmm, and working great. And so we're feeding the fear, when we're looking at the fear and we're living in the fear, and when we turn from that and we look for and keep our eyes and our spirits and our resources and our money and our time heading towards what's working, what's building beauty on life, then that's what we grow.
Putting our attention on that, on the beauty.
Exactly. And that's what this sun that has just come into being, you could say the sun or the energy of life that is now coming to us and filled in us, this is what's available to us now. So it's a time for people to start listening deeply to their hearts and to their spirits and cutting loose the things they don't need, starting to lead a simpler life, finding who their people are, and beginning to put their time, their money, their thoughts behind things that are sustainable, beautiful, growing life. And you know, I can't say enough about simplicity.
No, and right so now. The times are fostering that and encouraging it.
You bet. The whole materialism that we have lived in for so long was a part of that fifth sun cycle. And my prayer is that people now are going to realize that the things that you need to have are the things that you need to survive and live well for yourself, but that Mother Life is going to support everything as long as we stay in that place of peace and harmony and giving back to life the gifts that we've been given inside of us, and that's all it takes.
And inside of ourselves, too. And there was a beautiful quote that I saw from that you had written. The one most important thing you can do to change the course of history on our planet is to heal yourself of limiting and diminishing thoughts about yourself. Create a vibrant and healthy relationship with yourself. It will change everything in your world and mine. That the importance of the interconnection.
Exactly.
Why it's so important to work on ourselves.
Yeah.
And so with that human awareness, that consciousness that supports life, can again flourish as it once did.
Exactly.
And that's what these teachings are about. And how do they work?
How do they work? Well, you know, when I offer a medicine journey, one of these, like CGT, we were talking about counsel guide training, I mentioned a little bit early on about our understanding of the wholeness of life is based on the counsel, which is a way of perceiving the eight powerful forces that live in our universe that support life, that create life, and keep it growing. And those eight forces live in the human being as well as abilities and powers. And we can't really grow those eight different aspects of ourselves as long as we're judging ourselves or enslaving ourselves to things that break our spirit, or we're living in fear, or we're lost and kind of wandering around the maze, or we're working ourselves to death trying to support a lot of materialism and an idea of safety that is a lie. We can't grow these more beautiful, balanced, full, relaxed, and peaceful aspects of ourselves that lead us to the higher thoughts and the higher understandings of what needs to happen. So in a two-year medicine journey, we literally begin by teaching the people that come the base medicine wheels and that connect them back to the earth again. Because the first wheel, the sacred 20 count, speaks about the 20 great forces that have created all of our life and what those wisdoms are and how they live in us, because the number 5 on the sacred 20 count is the human, the sacred human. And so we're in and amongst all these other 19 amazing energy sources, and we've forgotten that. So it starts connecting us back to nature, to the Mother Earth and all of our other children and the Star Nation and all these powers. And then once we've remembered ourselves as a part of this natural hoop of life, then we begin to look at ourselves through this, you could call it an archetype, but it lives in every human being, this understanding of ourselves through nature that teaches us about what has been basically planted inside of us as beliefs or images or attitudes or opinions that, as children, oftentimes you walk through your life, and in order to survive your life, oftentimes you adopt lies. You turn yourself into the sick one if you have a family in which there is disease or sickness, because you can't live in a family whose parents are not healthy because you're afraid that they won't take care of you. So you make yourself the sick one. and you're not, but you pretend that you are, because that way they can take care of you. And then you grow yourself to become an adult, and you keep living your life as if you're not enough, or you're not smart enough, or you're not beautiful enough, or you're not whatever enough. Well, in one of these journeys, you've got to go back and look deeply into mm-hmm. yourself and see what kind of images or attitudes or beliefs or opinions you're carrying about yourself and life that are not true, mm-hmm. that are lies, that were planted in you by your society, by your beautiful relatives who did the best they could do because they have these same things planted in them, by your peers, your schools, your churches, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you examine these things deeply, and you discover what is true for you and what is not. And what is not, there's a ceremonial processes you go through in order to uproot those beliefs, those things that you have planted. Mm. And you've got to put something back in their place if you see
right.
it as a plant.
Sure.
Otherwise, it'll grow back, because these understandings that are life diminishing, they live everywhere in our culture. That's much of what our materialistic society mm-hmm. is based upon. Is everybody has to look just a certain way and work just a certain
yes.
way and have certain things in order to be all right.
Absolutely. So you're unraveling the dysfunctions
exactly.
that were forced on innocent babes.
Slowly and powerfully, and you're doing it with the Mother Earth and her other children and her powers. So there's a lot of help. And you do it with each other. I only work
yes.
in circles of people because this kind of deep work needs to be done in circles, because we are a people, whether we're, I'm not talking about culture by culture, I mean the human race. We are one human race, and
oh,
we
yes.
need each other to be able to see the things. There are things that others will see in me that I can't see in myself
mm-hmm.
until someone helps me in a good way to
mm-hmm.
see them, and this is part of the work that happens. And then there's a lot after the old images, attitudes, beliefs, and opinions have been uprooted. Then we look towards our power and look at mm-hmm. what do we need to grow in us to be able to live fully into the truth of who we are.
Once and, a solid foundation
yeah.
in the truth,
yes.
in the beauty and the sacredness of who we really are.
Right.
And that's based on something very actual and tangible
right.
with all of our relations.
Yes, exactly.
This is Alan and co-hosting here, and I was curious when you spoke of the fifth sun ending in around 91. I mean, obviously we still have a lot of these terrible things continuing on, like the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places, and we aren't completely finished with the old stuff. How you see that interplay between the disasters and the crises and the old system falling apart mm-hmm. and the new system coming? I mean, or the new consciousness coming into play?
Yeah, I think of it. Hi, Alan. I'm glad you're there.
Thanks.
It's a good question. You know, when we look at energy and how energy moves, it doesn't just stop. One cycle just doesn't end in a second and the next one is already there. There is a period between cycles in which one thing is kind of wearing itself out and the next one is beginning. So I think of that time period between 91 and just recently as kind of a period when there were many people on this planet still living the seeds that were planted in them as in 91. So you imagine children that were born in 90 or 91, in a sense they're still living in that energy of that sun coming in. And they're living in a paradigm with their parents and their world in which these things are being fed, and they're going to continue to be fed as they grow into adults and start making up their own minds about what they truly believe. That's just one metaphor for how that energy could trail out for so many years and still be affecting us. And the way I understand moving from this period now, when this new energy source is available to us and a new consciousness level has been achieved in us, because if you look around, especially in our own country, you see how tired in mm-hmm. the last couple of years we have gotten of being lied to,
mm-hmm.
of being led around by the nose when things were not what we were told they were. The shift in our presidency in this last term was a huge sign that many of us are done with that kind of energy.
Yeah.
And so there's this whole trail where this this energy of the warrior culture, it has to kind of diminish like smoke. You know, it's got to finish wafting out of our consciousness. And what I believe, now I'm not an expert on this, this is what comes through me, to me through dreaming work I do, through prayer work, and through study. But what I believe is that as 2012 approaches, what actually is going to happen in that time period is that all of a sudden, because you know how one thing changes another, there's going to be more human consciousness on this planet with their hearts and their spirits turned towards the beauty, the peace, and the yearning to make something that's going to be different. There'll be more of that than there is of that other mind left, and at that point, everything tips. Mm. You know, it's like we really start heading into that, fully into that new time when we're just not going to live our lives as we have in the past together.
So it's kind of like the 100th monkey syndrome.
Yeah. When I first heard that, it just made me laugh out loud. It's a beautiful way of saying what the old ones have been saying for a long time. I love it. And it's true.
Yes, it
you
is
know?
True.
And then there's going to be another gateway. See, after 2012, there's a period between 2012 and I honestly, I'll be honest with you, I can't remember what it is exactly as I'm sitting here right now, but there's a time period in which that new consciousness must root itself to. And at a certain point, it is absolutely, it's like a beautiful tree that's going to live for a long, long, long time, that new consciousness that we are becoming. What I think of is the potential human living in a in the deepest and most beautiful ways and fully as we can on this planet with each other. It's just not too late. I hear that all the time. You know, we screwed it up so bad that, you know, it's too late and it's never going to be right. And that's just absolutely not true. Mm-hmm. There is nothing that can't be cured and healed and cared for. Mm-hmm. And we're either going to release ourselves and go along in this long cycle. And it seems long to us, but, you know, we're
it's
only
a bleeping
playing a
time,
very short
really.
Role.
Yeah, and it is playing a short role.
Yeah,
well said.
In a very long cycle of shift of consciousness in the human realm, shifting with everything else around us.
And all of our relatives, the two-legged, the trees, and all that we share the planet with are welcoming this shift in our awareness.
Oh, completely.
Long overdue. Yeah.
And they are shifting too.
Yeah.
All consciousness is.
And to get back to the teachings, you started to go into the second part where you're paying attention to and fostering the power after you have the foundation, have worked through the limiting beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to hear more about the power?
Yes, I certainly do. And,
yeah,
you know, it's great
like
that you're offering this. It's like you're creating, you're training us for what's going to be helpful.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it was seen a long time ago.
Tumultuous.
Yeah. Many of our old ones, you know, saw that this information was really going to be needed. It's always been needed, but especially, you know, in this time that we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
The human... Gosh, we have latent, everybody knows this. Anybody that's had any kind of experience in a deep spiritual path or even what some people call ESP and, you know, those kinds of things knows that we have abilities that we don't use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people that are called shaman. There are people that are called seers and shapeshifters. These are just three of the powers that every human has laying latent in them. Their ability to use these things to navigate the present moment, navigate the future, to shift energy states when needed to bring life and to grow life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these things have been traveling around, these powers in us, and we've limited ourselves over many generations to think that we could be one or the other, but we have eight different faces to the power that we carry.
Could you say a little bit about those faces?
Yeah. Would you like to join CGT?
I probably will. I was up at Ihama many, many years ago, I think you may remember.
Yeah.
And I went through the 20 count, and that changed my life.
Yeah.
And I need more than a refresher at this point. It was just deeply profound.
Yeah.
I looked at the insidiousness of greed. I looked at the dysfunction and then started with the powers, and then they moved.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I can give you a peek.
Sure.
Let's call it the eight directions that live inside every human being. So in the east of us is an ability that we have to harness the power and the freedom and the creativity that lives in the sun. The sun is the one on the sacred 20 count. And the human, we have this spirit. First, we are spirit before we are human. And the spirit, being able to express itself fully into life, is an immense power that cannot be stopped. It cannot be contained. This is where our sense of our deepest freedoms lie. Mm-hmm. And so it's always the first place on the wheel, because sometimes we humans, we can get a little bit tied down and kind of hemmed in and trapped in a lot of ideas about what we are supposed to be doing and what's appropriate and what is proper. And sometimes it begins to kill our spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So that power is one of being able to call, you could say, on the light, life force, to break through things, to open the doorways, and to go into realms. I think of somebody like Einstein, who was incredible at harnessing this power.
Yes.
And being able to come up with things, ideas, and understandings that most humans said were impossible for him to come up with. But they're available to any human being.
And I think of Tesla, Gandhi, Martin Luther King. Where did it come from?
Yeah. Well, see, each of them have some or all of these abilities and powers that are awake and alive in them at some level. And in the southeast of us is the ability to literally be so present in this moment that there is no sense of past or future, totally at one with this whole life hoop. And in that moment, when you are totally at one, and everybody's had an experience that usually at least once in their life, what's called a sense of oneness, when you're connected to everything.
Yes.
In that ability, when you practice it and you grow it, you can literally... you're living in a timeless state in which all time exists. So the past and the future is kind of sucked into that moment. And it's a incredibly empowering, the deepest kind of stillness that you could imagine. And it's a very rich part of ourselves, or a state of being in us, in which we can gather a lot of wisdom for ourselves and for our people. And in the south of us, the ability to seek into life, grow into life in the most power with no fear, absolutely no fear, and a very clear mind of understanding that when danger exists, it's simply a signpost giving you some ideas about how to navigate over it, under it, around it, or through it, that fear never will stop you again.
Mm-hmm.
And the power of this mind is one that we really have lost a lot of in our cultures, because it's been... it's actually been kind of knocked out of us purposefully.
Yes.
Like we said before, as long as the fear is there, we can be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
But when you give up the fear, there's nothing that can stop the power of the human moving out into life in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And in the southwest of us is the ability to understand each of our own sacred dream of life and to live it fully. There's a great weave that we're a part of. There's a sacred dream going on here that started when our universe was created, and we are an intricate part of it, and every human being walking on this planet has their own thread to that sacred dream. Every one of us was born here purposefully. Each one of us carries a set of gifts and a heartfelt yearning to bring something into life that only we can bring, and Mother Life knows that we are important. And when your feet are on that pathway, you sing inside all the time. You feel the joy, the fulfillment, and the sense of being a part of a greater weave that brings you great joy, and everyone else around you too. So it's that ability to tap into the aspect of you that knows that dream of yourself and will not let your feet off of it, knows how to achieve it and move towards it always. And then in the west of us lives the healer. In every human being, there's a powerful healer. There is all of the understanding in your body, minds.
Mm-hmm.
There is the wisdom. There is the connection to the Mother Earth and all the planets and the source of matter and the designs of life that keep things being gestated and birthed over and over again, feeding life.
Yes.
And we know how to heal. Yeah. And we all have our own abilities. There's not going to be, I believe, in the future, a whole lot of only one accepted way to heal something. There's many ways.
Yeah.
And each of us has that ability. Everyone is a healer. So opening the door to the healer in yourself, of course, mm-hmm. beginning with yourself and learning how to, if that's a part of your gift to offer the world, how to cultivate that gift and how to use it. And in the north, west of us is mm-hmm. the seer that lives inside of us, the part of us that's so deeply connected to all these cycles that we can all literally see into the future. We can see what is coming. Mm-hmm. We're aware of cause and effect at the most deep and subtle levels. Mm-hmm. And we know that every thought, word, and deed impacts. Mm-hmm. And so in this particular state of being or this ability, you are aware of your thought, word, and deed and what it's going to create and whether or not it's going to create a cycle of beauty and fullness and growth or whether it's going to create something that could be diminishing and somehow belittling to life. It's also a great power.
What's so beautiful in these teachings and the way we did at one time live is you can be in a circle with others to check out what it is you're receiving.
Exactly.
And share. Mm-hmm. And I can remember the different, I think it was working with the Iroquois circle. There was a chief for the children, a chief, a war chief, a peace chief, and we spent, time was irrelevant. What came forward from each individual after deep reflection.
Yeah, yeah.
It was profound.
Right. You're speaking about the council.
The yes.
way the council that we carry, which has eight chiefdoms in it, with eight different perspectives to look at anything.
Oh, that's different.
It's basically the same thing.
Yes.
And every tribe in those days, you know, had eight different perspectives in which they used to govern and hold all the wisdom for their people so they didn't create anything that was not of wholeness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah.
The safeguards mm-hmm. that were instrumental.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sorry, this is just so exciting to me. I probably will be there. Also, so we finished with the seer, and what number was that? And that was in the...
That
was it, I forget the direction.
Yeah, that was in the northwest.
The northwest.
So then in the north of us is the ability to be able to access the truth and the knowing of your heart. Always, and to let it guide you into your actions rather than to live in doubt or you know, this mind that many humans nowadays get in where they're kind of waffling, sitting on the fence. It's really the power of accessing the wisdom of your animal nature because we're all just one step away from that. We still have an animal heart in our chest. We still have animal instincts. We have been domesticated.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this particular power that you have, you release that domestication inside you, and you feel and sense exactly what is needed in any moment, and you can move that quickly to the greatest heart's desire and the best possible action that you can create given what's in front of you. So it's a way of beginning to stop living through just the brain mind, but mm-hmm. letting the heart have its say and following that. And then the last one on the wheel is in the northeast, and that's the aspect of us that can read all energy, that can read energy in other humans, every situation, can read energy into other life forms that are around us, or even the stones or the clouds, that is in full communication with these different energy states,
mm-hmm.
and will create harmony.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point of being able
to do this.
And this aspect of us, some call it the shapeshifter. It's the ability to change an energy state
mm-hmm.
inside yourself or outside yourself in order to bring more life, more beauty, more harmony, more peace through our ability to change our own force around us. So it's quite a subtle and deep ability that humans have. And we do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, salesmen do it a lot.
Yes,
people that have
an agenda,
something that they've got to get done, they learn a language and they learn how to work people's energy in order to get it. But the for us in the Northeast, this is where we hold our only laws that we have in our tradition. We have two laws, only two. And
mm-hmm.
those two laws are enough. We don't need any more than that. And the first one basically teaches us that we must protect the ground for birth of all of life.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, of course, all life forms, but it also means the ground for new ideas and new things to come into systems, because otherwise they become rote, they become dogmatic, and they begin to die. The second law protects the ground of growth of all things that are born. That says anything that comes into being needs the right to grow and to come to its fullness, to see if it's going to fruit and create something that is going to bring more harmony. And if it doesn't, then it will die away anyway. Mm-hmm. So these two sacred laws are always, for all of these powers that we carry, those two laws govern us as to what we can do with them and how we use them, because they need to be only be used for creating life, birthing life, and creating life.
And they're universal.
Yes, you bet. And they're in every human being. When you realize that every human that sits in front of you, even somebody you don't like very much, has these abilities and powers that lives in them, that is another sacred human walking inside that skin that has a spirit, it's really hard to not like them or to have a problem with them, or to even pick up a weapon and try to hurt them, because they're us.
So
there is no enemy, you know.
And in being in harmony with that universal law is to nurture that in the other person as you nurture it in yourself.
Well, exactly. If you are nurturing it in yourself, you will nurture it in the other. If you're not nurturing it in yourself, you'll find it hard to nurture it in the other.
And that's the importance of gaining the foundation in overcoming the limitations and the dysfunctions.
We actually teach people how to be selfish.
Yes,
I think it's an important thing, because whatever disease lives inside of us, physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, it is what we put into the world, and it is how we see the world.
Yes.
We see our world through these limiting beliefs and these horrible ways that we hold a self-hatred or shame or self-judgment for the self. We see everything through those eyes. And when we can heal ourselves and love and cherish the spirit that lives in us, then when we look out of our eyes, it's amazing how the whole world has changed.
Yes.
You know, everybody all of a sudden is much kinder and nicer and more beautiful, and it's an amazing thing.
And you have that to share with others in the process, in this training.
It's my favorite thing to do.
Oh, I know. And such a gift you're giving to the world.
Well, I've been given a lot of gifts, too. I had beautiful people always holding me and helping me see what I needed to see, and it's an amazing journey.
I can hear it in your voice, too.
Yeah.
And I know the trainings are going to be happening here in Ben Lomond.
Yeah.
And you're going to be teaching.
Yes, exactly. We're starting one. I'm living out in New Mexico, and we're starting one of these council guide trainings. It's a 2-year medicine journey in Ben Lomond at a beautiful place. And I have some amazing women that I have been training and for some years that decided it was time to pull together a group out there, because most of them live out there. And
Rita.
Yeah, Rita.
And
exactly.
She's been on here twice.
Yeah, she's the one you guys would contact if anybody was interested in joining up or coming to one of these ceremonies and finding out what's going on, if it's calling to someone's heart.
So what does that mean, a 2-year? Does that mean you're committed for 2 years?
Exactly.
But what is the commitment to... I mean, obviously, it's your whole life, but...
Well, you're committing yourself to yourself, literally. I believe in discipleship, disciple meaning the discipleship of the self. You become a disciple of yourself. And so for 2 years, you come to a ceremony that lasts 4 days every quarter. So you're going to attend actually 9 ceremonies altogether. There's 8 teaching training ceremonies, and then the very last ceremony is a blessing ceremony that we do down in Tulum. We go back to the home of the ancestors of this tradition and have a beautiful, beautiful blessing ceremony down there at a place where we do some sacred work with some of the temple sites and things there. And each ceremony is a training ceremony where you're learning a lot of the tools you will be using in the 3 months between ceremonies, and then during the 3 months between, you're working together as a circle. In a, we've actually created these amazing online lodges, internet lodges, so that our people can continue their medicine work and stay connected, keep using their mirrors. Even I've got a group now that I'm running in Turkey. I've got a number of them in Denmark, and the one in Turkey has, I think, 31 people in it, and they're from 15 different countries. And they are creating a very intimate, powerful circle by using these online lodges. This is one of those examples of the amazing ability for technology to do good in the world. I oftentimes say, you know, if the old people had computers, they would have used them. They would have thought they
sure
were pretty
good.
Sure,
they would have.
So anyway, you connect in these lodges, and you get taught the information during the four-day ceremony, and there's personal ceremonial healing, things that go on during those ceremonies. And then in between, you're actually taking the wheels and the changes, and you're using this stuff in your life. My own company that I do my work through is called Dance Hammers. And Dance Hammers is a term that we hold very dear to us in this tradition. It means to take the medicine wheels inside yourself and like a metalsmith, dance on these wheels as if they were made of metal and pound on them with your life and fit them into your life and find out what they do, because I don't want people taking my words and saying, oh, White Eagle said this is right. They take whatever I say, they take these wheels home, and then they use them and they find out how they work. And they pound them into themselves in the different corners of their lives and find out how they change things. So that's what goes on in the 3 months between, and they work together during this time. And then we come back together again for another four-day ceremony. It's over 5 days from Wednesday morning through Sunday.
Now, these are held at different locations, or will they be here?
They'll all be at the same venue. It's the Earth Retreat just outside of Ben Lomond there, beautiful place, and except for the last one. The ninth one will be in Tulum, Mexico.
Oh, that's the one.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. And by that time, the circle is amazingly deep. They're a family. They've gone, you know, to the ends of themselves together and done some amazing healing work and changing work. And they're very close. And then they stay very close after that.
For sure. The bonding must be tremendous.
Lots of ways. Lots of ways.
And I know there's going to be an introductory weekend of sorts. You're coming to Santa Cruz next weekend. I'll be at Sundance, unfortunately.
Well, that's not unfortunate.
No, I'm thrilled that I'll be. I know.
Yeah.
It's been a while, 3 years since I've danced, so I'm really excited about going back again.
Good for you.
Yes, and I know you just finished.
we just finished our dance.
Is it possible if someone misses the first weekend to jump into the first training?
You bet.
Okay.
You bet. And the introduction is really for people that aren't clear. They need a little more introduction to us, to the tradition, to feel it, you know, in their selves if they're not clear. And even if you came, if you couldn't come to the first introduction and you came to the first launch, the first ceremony, you could still be holding the question as to whether you continue. I don't want people to step into this journey if they're doubtful fully, because it's a deep, deep journey. It's a life-changing journey, and you've got to feel the truth of it in your heart when you come and you touch the ceremony, you touch the energy, and you see the people that are going to be holding you. That's really important.
Yes, it is. So, but you are going to be in town next weekend.
Yes, I'm coming in this next week, and we're actually going to do, I think, two or three corn plantings, what we call corn plantings, which are short meetings, a couple of hours long, where we sit with people and talk about what we're doing and answer questions and get to know people. And, again, you could call Rita if you wanted to know about those times. I don't have them on me right now, but she could tell you when we're going to be having those corn plantings and where.
Okay.
And I would just love to see if you're around, and you may be at the dance already. But
I'm leaving this weekend.
Oh, okay.
I'm leaving Sunday morning. And I do have Rita's email, and I'll get her number.
I have her phone number here.
Oh, great. Yes, please announce that for us.
So it's Rita at area code 831-212-4605. That's 212-4605.
Great. And then her her email address is martinico, MARTINICO, at MSN.com, if you'd rather correspond that way. And do you have the dates of the ceremonies?
You mean the corn plantings? Or
no,
the
actual
launch.
Training for maybe this year.
No, I don't.
I think I do. I have the introductory week in July 28th through August 1st, and the ceremony August 27th through the 31st. That could be the first one.
Correct, that's the first one.
And then in 2011, it's January 19th to the 23rd,
yeah.
Then April 6th through the 10th, and then on down. And Tulum is in 2012,
of course.
October 22nd through the 27th. How auspicious.
Yeah.
But this is all on the website,
mm-hmm.
and I believe it's dancehammers.com.
Correct.
And also, a Delicate Lodge Teachings or Ihama Institute. Can this also be accessed on those websites?
There is a link for Ihama Institute and for
okay.
the work that Rainbow Hawk and Wind Eagle are doing in the world, and you can go to the dancehammers.com website and links to them if you're interested in that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is truly profound, this work.
Yeah.
Amazing. It just incorporates so many aspects of life.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
And the powers
well.
That we're just not trained to yeah. understand. If we hadn't been trained as we have been, we probably would just naturally.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all have to wake up to the truth of what lives inside of us, and I don't think it's something you can rush too fast. And I think
no.
we're now ready to take a hold of the full potential that lives in us and use it for something that's going to be amazingly beautiful on this planet. I trust that with all of my heart.
I know.
I really believe in human beings, and that's why I do what I do. You know, when I was growing up, I didn't see a lot of examples of powerful, beautiful humans around me,
mm-hmm.
but my spirit kept saying that mm-hmm. that was true, that we are beautiful inside and that we are powerful and that we can be free and that we can walk on this planet in a beautiful way inside of ourselves, loving ourselves and
yeah.
loving all others. And I just had to uncover the maps.
yeah.
And when I found this tradition, they were the maps that showed how we can awaken that in us again now.
Absolutely.
In a whole new way. I mean, we're not going back to being what we quote-unquote were. We're going forward to be something more than we have been. And that's the bigger truth. We are more prepared now
mm-hmm.
and ready to take on the truth of the power that we carry inside of ourselves for all of life.
To
not
meet
not
that
just
power.
For the human realm. This is not just for the
no.
humans. So
And you're joining hearts with others in the process when you're working with these energies.
You bet.
And it's just so beautiful.
There's so many faces. And I have this image that I play with sometimes that all these old spiritual traditions are like one beautiful piece of a great big puzzle.
Huh.
And as we lay them side by side, then we'll see the bigger picture that we haven't really fully seen it yet. And that just gets me excited because there's more to see.
It's so creative and going forward.
Exactly.
And we're seeing a lot more crossover, seeing some of the Hindu traditions, mm-hmm. Swami Kaleshwar that we've connected with,
yeah.
connecting with
yeah.
the history of Jesus and like
yeah.
coming
yes.
to India and all this and the indigenous traditions sharing things in common with Chinese medicine that I practice. And so there's so much overlap and interchange that's starting to happen.
Yeah. Well, what's happening is the great weave is getting uncovered.
Oh, yes.
That we're starting to see how we have always been woven side by side. We just forgot that we were, and
so
we started isolating from each other.
And it isn't necessarily a new paradigm. It's an old paradigm
yeah.
that we somehow lay to rest.
Well, and now we're ready to fully live
Pick
into it,
up.
I believe that. So.
And created anew at the same time.
You bet.
For our times.
You bet.
Well, thank you so much, Wyatt.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Nicole, this has been tremendous.
Yeah, I've enjoyed
I'm
it too.
Really honored that you were able to come on, and I know you're on the road, and you
yes.
took the time to stop and go to a phone.
Again.
A landline.
Mm.
And you'll be in Santa Cruz next weekend
yes.
for the introductory to this training. And again, it's dancehammers.com.
Correct.
Is the website. And read his phone number once more.
Is 831
okay.
212-4605.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank
and
you
enjoy.
So much, too. I've appreciated being here with you. And, and whoever's listening, just keep your eyes up. Keep
yes.
aiming straight. And don't let the fear grab a hold of you.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not the truth of who we are.
Not anymore.
It's to be used to help navigate our journeys.
Exactly.
A little prodding in a certain direction goes a long way.
And thank you too, Alan, back there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I hope to meet you guys again someday.
I do too. You will.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank
Go well
you.
Then.
Thank you again.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was White Hawk, and she'll be here next weekend to talk about these ancient traditions. I believe they're, you know, she said they're different, they're members from different tribes that pass this information on to their descendants, and they were Mayan, Iroquois, Cheyenne, largely from the Americas. And we're going to have next the Raging Grannies. I believe they're outside. And before they come on, I'm going to play a little bit of the dance, because it is that season, Sundance. See if we can get it on before I depart.
The Pueblo elders have lived through many hardships.
We'll be talking with the Raging
Grannies. They always have
a
twinkle in their eye when they talk about the dance. My grandma always says, Uyuhone, Uyuhune, Yonmokealhumanuts Oyatoona. Now when your arms and your legs are strong, now is the time to experience and experiment with the dance. I visited many cultures, and I think it is a dance that keeps them alive and keeps them together. This is called the dance.
Love. I dance.
listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM and online it's www.freeradiosantacruz. And as you know, we are always looking for donations, and those can be mailed to FRSC P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz 95061. And I have with me live in the studio four of our local Raging Grannies. They have some incredible protest songs for you. But before I put them on, I just want to read a little bit. From the most ancient times, the strong, wise, older women were the ones who advised, mediated, and fought for what was right. Belief in the Tsar Divine Grandmothers, the mothers of time, is ancient and runs through all societies. The Celts listened to their older spokeswomen, since they believed that Kali, the crone, had the power to create their mountain ranges. The Malay thought that there were three grandmothers, the Kari under the earth, who would cause floods if not listened to respectfully. There were the Druids, who believed that the souls of old wise women lived on in the trees that surrounded them. The Norse Nanna or Anna, doubled as Earth Mother, and on our island, Turtle Island, the Iroquois teach that the woman who fell down from the sky was the mother of all. So these older women are the clan mothers who guide all decisions. What a history. Grannying is the least understood yet most powerful weapon. Sometimes, looking back, we can see grannying was the only thing and still is the only thing that can truly meet a need. I welcome them all. I'm going to start here with Cappy. I'm just going to let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Cappy. And we've been singing for a number of years together here in Santa Cruz with the Raging Grannies. It's very cathartic to sing about things that are difficult to talk about.
Yes. And then we have Jan Howard, and later she's going to be reading from a novel that is an amazing work in progress. It's about it's a murder mystery about the Raging Grannies, so that will be a lot of fun. And Jan, do you want to just say a little bit about yourself?
Hi. I'm distinguished by the fact that I write all the songs that we sing, almost all. Once in a while we get some off from the other granny groups, but usually we sing our own, as all the groups tend to do. There are groups, you know, all over the United States and quite a few in other countries. In fact, they first started in, I think it was 1986 in Canada, Edmonton. And it just spread like wildfire in Canada. And then, of course, during the Bush administration.
Oh, I know. What almost, a way to recruit, bring in George Bush.
Almost every group of Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, almost every branch started its own granny group. Plus, there are others, groups of them that don't even belong to WILF, but we're very proudly a gaggle from the local WILF group, and we all work for that in many other ways besides singing. But yeah, we have found that singing saved our lives during the Bush administration in a way, because everybody was so upset all the time, one bad thing after another, day after day, and we would all have been in the depths of despair if we hadn't had something to lighten it up. Mm-hmm. And we figured that would help other people too, so we started singing. And sure enough, people listened to our words with delight and laugh, and everybody felt just a little bit better.
That's for sure. And your what you wear, the flowery hats and the colorful outfits.
Yeah.
It's so disarming, and yet you're so powerful.
Well, we now have a website called SantaCruzRagingGrannies.com, And most of our songs are posted on it. They're listed on the site, and you can get the words to any of them. And they're all too old tunes that many people, if not most people, who are a little bit older than 20, know. We do concerts all over the place whenever anybody asks us or whenever we see a cause that we need to support. We just go do it. We've been working a lot lately with Wilf's campaign to get rid of plastic water bottles. We have songs about that. We have songs about the oil that's been spilling in so tragically into our ocean. We have been supporting Wes Modes of Sub Rosa, the anarchist group.
Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, he was strangely arrested for trying to support the drummers at the farmer's market. I think it was way back last February or something like that. So he went to court for that, and he got a very small probation or something, thank goodness. But in the meantime, apparently the local law enforcement really has their eye on him, and the Sentinel likes to make the most of it. So when he marched in the last night celebration, the substitute for what we used to call first night, which was now a peace march, and he was one of those who marched with the peaceniks in the beginning, early part of the march on New Year's Eve, and of all the people there, he was one who got a ticket. And this was a very expensive ticket because it was for not having a permit to march, which hasn't bothered them before, but this year it turned out it was a big deal. So he went to court on that. And
the fines can be hefty.
And I'm not sure, did it get settled, Cappy?
Sure.
I don't think it has quite. No, it's not quite settled yet. We've gone to several of, and Margaret has gone to all of them, all of the hearings at the court. That's Margaret
Thank
Metzinger,
you, Margaret.
Who will be talking to you in a moment, and we wrote a song for him, which demands that we all get a ticket, since he got a ticket and no.
We've got to hear that.
Which was a campaign started by Sherry Connable, who's always very involved in the march. She didn't get a ticket, and she thought that was not fair. So
it isn't.
And we have songs to support the drummers, because we love the drummers.
At the farmer's market.
Yeah.
Your friend Coral drums down there.
And there were a lot of... but mostly we work on national and international things, the big corporations that are running our world.
Yes, you tackle a lot in the militarization of our society.
Yeah.
The desecration of the land.
And of civil rights.
Yes.
Yes. So
we
have songs about just about everything you can think of importance. So let me.
And who's next?
Turn you over to Willow.
Willow.
Hi, I'm Willa.
Willa.
And of all the decades of working on many different political issues, singing with Raging Grannies is the most fun I've ever had doing political work or play. And so I'm delighted to be singing with us. And I'm also delighted right now, speaking of the criminal injustice system, to be able to say that Carlos Alberto Torres, who is a Puerto Rican independentista who's been in prison for decades, will be getting free soon. So that's very exciting. So anyway, I will pass it on to Margaret. Willa.
Margaret.
I'm Margaret Metzinger, and I'm the last of the four grannies that are here today. It doesn't mean that there are only four of us, but the four of us have managed to squeeze into this cozy little studio today.
It is.
And
that.
I'd like to express my gratitude to Jan, who spoke a little while ago, for making it possible for us to have such a wonderful time singing about political issues. Mm-hmm. And I'll turn you back over now to your
Me,
manager,
I guess. Your host.
To you, who calls herself me. Here you go.
Janaea or Cindy, whatever mood strikes you. I am eager to hear you sing.
Would you like to hear the song we wrote for the anarchists? None of us is an anarchist, I don't think, but we... We think that people have a right to whatever their political ideas are, and we do not like it that one nice guy, which Wes is, gets the police on his back.
Great.
And
give us a note.
So we're
just setting up the mics here, and in a moment we're going to hear, what's the name of it?
It's called Give Me a Ticket.
Give Me a Ticket, and this is for Wes.
Yeah, and it's to the old tune, When You Wore a Tulip. That's so old, I don't know if anybody remembers it, yet, who's not as old as we are. But
give us a note.
Give me a ticket. Oh, where is my ticket? I strolled out on New Year's Eve. I walked with my brothers, my sisters, and mothers, so I don't deserve reprieve. We shone our little lights on that coldest of nights just to show that we wanted peace. It isn't fair. It's not cricket. I don't have a ticket. Won't somebody call the police? Oh, give me a ticket, a shocking pink ticket. I seem to have bent a rule. Without town permission, I courted perdition. I was such a crazy fool. Now I've learned my lesson, so hear me confessing. What West got, I should get too. It isn't fair, it's not cricket. I want my own ticket, or we might have to picket you, Mr. Barrisoni.
Bravo, bravo. I want to hear more.
We've sung it a couple of times and other things at the Sub Rosa open mic night on Thursday evenings at 7:30, I guess. So it's fun to go there and sing. It's always a nice little crowd and a lot of good...
Better yet, you could sing it in front of the police station.
Yeah, right.
And you don't have to go to the Sub Rosa only if you know how to sing. It's a wonderful place to go on a Thursday evening, and for a very small fee, you can come in and spend a wonderful evening listening to a variety of people reading, singing.
And being very funny, because there are some good comedians.
What's next? Do you want to sing the song BP Oil? I saw
BP.
I've been doing a series of interviews, and I'm going to continue to.
We have
an Indigenous perspective on what had happened, and then
that's good. We have two on the subject, and that one is focused directly on BP. In fact, it's called BP. Let's see. Starts on.
Here we go.
BP. We wonder what you were drinking, for while your glasses were clinking,
You drilled a hole without thinking. BP, you knew just why you were drilling. All your investors were thrilling. They knew they'd soon make a killing. But then, quite suddenly, it all disintegrated. Your men were fodder for the fish far and wide. It's just the cost of doing business, you stated. We'll plug the hole and drill another by its side. BP, you thought there'd be nothing to it. You said no problem, just screw it. But now it seems you can't do it. You say you'll pay for everybody's awful losses. $20 billion here and there won't be a drain. You'll give enormous bonus payments to your bosses, but none to all the seabirds you have slain. BP, when all the oceans are tar pits, though beaches smell like cigar pits, you'll walk around on red carpets.
That's not making you happy, is it?
No, it's not.
You're not smiling.
No, no. That's painful, but it's so true. They are walking on red carpets and walking
and they
away with it
will.
All.
Shall we do another oil song?
Yeah, let's go right on to crude oil.
One question. How are these? Did you write these songs?
Yeah.
Jan Harlow.
My gosh. Do you have much time to practice together?
She does crossword puzzles, the hardest ones. She's just good at it.
She's great.
And she says she's good at doggerel.
That's what?
And we make
doggerel.
We meet at Jan's house once every 2 weeks on a Monday in the afternoon from 1 to 3 and practice.
Were you singers before this, or?
No.
No?
I was,
good
but
job.
I think I'm the only one.
You were activists, though, so this has been in your heart. And
yes,
somehow,
yes.
Did this spring out, the local chapter spring from the Women's International League
absolutely,
for Peace and Freedom?
Absolutely, yes.
And I used to be involved with folk music.
Oh, Cappy. I've known Cappy before. I thought so.
Yeah,
but
I've been working on anti-nuclear work since the early 60s, and that's been my great passion. And and we have a table every week on Pacific Avenue in front of the bookshop, and we ask people to sign usually a postcard to some politician that we want to change his or her ways or to the president to tell him what he ought to be doing.
That can be fun when you're doing it all together, but this is a ball. That's an Eastern term.
Yeah.
It really is. Not used in California.
Have you got a note? Have you got a note?
Is that too high? They're working on the tone, I think. The appropriate note. I'm not a musician. Here we go. Is this another song about the oil crisis?
Okay, shall we?
Here we go. Crude oil. Two, three.
The sea is engulfed in a stink of crude oil. The world holds its nose to avoid the smell. We can't see the light through the plumes of crude oil. BP drilled a hole to the bowels of hell. A gusher of death for the fish, for the coral reefs, for the dolphins and whales. Death for the pelicans, gulls, and terns, for the krill and the snails. No work for the fishermen, food for the folks who depend on the sea. With anguish we cry for the ocean the way it should be. We know man has wrought this disastrous moment. Our thirst for the oil that destroys the sky, we must break its hold. There's no time for wasting, or our world will die.
Wow. Beautiful. Thank you.
That's not a funny one either.
No, and what the music does is it cuts through any resistance or denial as to what really happened.
Yes.
You know, you can feel it.
We also get active in the whole issue as water, as a human right, not a commodity to be withheld from people.
So this really struck a chord, too, on that. Do you have any songs regarding water as a right?
We have one called, not actually about that,
it's about
taking care of our water.
So precious.
We have one here.
We're going to be sun-dancing without it for 4 days and four nights.
That's right. There's absolutely nothing that can live on this earth without water.
It's the first thing you feel.
Yeah.
And very small proportion of the water on earth is fresh water.
What's the percentage, Cappy?
Tiny.
And once it goes into the ocean, it becomes salt water. So there's really not nearly enough from evaporation to replenish the supply.
And the idea of desalinization doesn't feel quite right to me either.
It uses a lot of energy, and it turns out we need to look into it much more deeply before spending millions on it when we can't even keep our libraries open.
Mm-hmm. I know it really needs to be researched before plunging into it and the major expense of that. Another opportunity for the corporations to make a living at our expense.
We have a song,
of course,
in honor of Jean Hill, who is an 82-year-old woman from Concord, Massachusetts.
Oh, I'm from Winchester.
Really? Well, you guys have the brilliant and wonderful idea of town meetings there. Where you make decisions for the town.
My relatives were town meeting members. I grew up. They're really honoring that tradition.
Jean Hill, when she learned from her grandson that there was a terrible mass, a continent-sized mass, maybe two of them in the Atlantic Ocean and another in the Pacific, she decided something had to be done about it. So she went to her town meeting and made such an impassioned speech that they voted 300-0 to I'm not sure what the other vote was, but they won to ban all plastic water bottles in that town.
Wow.
Which is the first town in the country that has done such a thing.
Well, it still has to be put in a form of different legal form so that it can get into a final form and get actually carried out.
The impact of the Raging Granny is that's just one example.
Well, she wasn't even a singing Raging Granny, but she was sure as hell a Raging Granny.
And at 82,
she don't have to sing a Raging Granny.
We wrote a song for her, and we call it Jean Hill. It's to an old British tune about hunting, which is called Diga Ken John Peel.
Oh, this is going to be fun. What was it called?
Diga Ken John Peel.
Oh,
let's take a note.
Ken John Peel.
Do you ken Jean Hill with her hair so gray? Do you ken her words on this fateful day? She has banned bottled water from Concord, MA. She has given our world fair warning. For when Hill saw the size of our plastic debris, biggest Texas and Maine all a swirl in the sea, she cried out, "Nevermore shall we drink heedlessly, for a plastic-free world is a-borning." Do you ken dear Jean, who's as old as the hills? She has witnessed the sea running black from the spills. She declares plastic chokes, it pollutes and it kills. So we'll ban it first thing in the morning. Do you ken Jean Hill, raging granny for sure? For the sake of the kids, we would keep water pure. For the fish in the sea, there is no other cure. We have given the world fair warning.
Wonderful. I had to chime in with that one. Thank you, Kathy.
Good. We were glad.
I wrote her a letter and sent her a copy of the song, and she responded with a wonderful letter mentioning our Women's International League for Peace and Freedom gaggle of Raging Grannies. And she wrote it to a local paper, and so we're very glad that we reached out to
her. One question I have. I know you've been to many protests and probably been arrested many times. What is one of the more memorable experiences? Does anyone want to jump in and where you had an impact and something was changed?
Well, I can't say that
many.
We have ever changed any government ideas about the ones I've been to have mostly been about nuclear weapons one way and another. And
we've been to Vandenberg protesting various launches of the delivery systems for nuclear warheads.
Yes, and to Livermore, where, of course, they make all kinds of really nasty things in the labs.
And we've gotten arrested both places.
Yeah. And I've been arrested, I think, 9 other times at various places. The first time it was funny because I had been working as a counselor in the women's jail in Milpitas. And I had just transferred out of there after a year and a half, and I got arrested at Lockheed for crossing a line and passing out flyers to the workers.
Such a minor.
And they put me in that jail that I had just been working in, and everybody there said, "Hi, Jen! Nice to see you there!" Yeah.
That's just it. You're ordinary, and yet your impact, because you are disarming. You know, that's my understanding.
That's our whole plan.
That's what
to be
I love
disarming,
about it.
Yes.
The Raging Grannies actually went down to the recruitment center with other peaceniks from
Navy,
this area.
Army recruitment center.
Down in Capitola. Military.
Oh, yes, our local
and,
one.
And a couple of years ago, and made quite a little stand there. We wanted to get, well, we took the lead, actually, from Raging Grannies in other parts of the country, in New York and Arizona, was it? And we wanted to get inducted. We wanted to get into the Marines so that our grandkids wouldn't have to.
What did they?
They
was
didn't accept us, but we kept our foot in the door.
Literally.
We wouldn't let them shut the door. Ellie Foster,
save
who is one of our grand old activists in town.
She had a walker. I met her. Oh, gosh, with a walker. Oh, I love it.
She was standing blocking the door so they couldn't close it with her walker and a big, sweet, grandmotherly smile on her face for about three hours while we hung steady and we didn't
three
move.
3 hours?
Yeah, we had stuff to read to them.
It shows you
we
really
sang.
We sang a song about the soldiers, bring them home, bring them home.
Of course, the recruiters, who are these, you know, very cute young cops. They thought we were goofy, and they were grinning all the time and acting like, oh, these silly old ladies. But they had to give up. They couldn't make us go away, so they had to get the police to come and arrest us, which they did. But the police were very reluctant to haul off a bunch of little old ladies, some of them in walkers and wheelchairs. And but they took us down to the police station in Capitola and booked us. And
there were a couple of men and boys.
Yeah, there were some men.
That were with you?
Mm-hmm.
Protesting.
Mm-hmm. And, it was a big protest.
To think of arresting your mother or your grandmother, it must be really hard.
I think that's what they were feeling, you know, like, I don't want to do
that. And they do have a point.
Well, yes.
Maybe running through their mind. And they're doing this for us, ultimately.
Shall
We've
we
got
sing
a song here.
Bring them home for you?
Yes, I'd love to hear
it. It's another one that's not funny, I'm warning you.
Okay.
I would love it. Bring them home, bring them home, bring them back where they belong. They're our children, stop the killing. Bring them home, bring them home. They have marched off to learn how to kill and be killed. Will they know how to love us and be kind, and be kind? Those who made this bad war sent them off filled with lies. Some are dying, some are crying, broken hearts are their prize. Are their minds filled with fear? Are their souls filled with shame? For their country they have slaughtered. Will they know whom to blame? Bring them home, bring them home, bring them back where they belong. They're our children, stop the killing. Bring them home. Bring them home.
Yeah, right, sometimes we cry when we sing that song. And unfortunately, we've been singing it now for close to 8 years.
When will the madness stop? I wish this could be on the news and sung from sea to shining sea.
And oily sea.
Yeah. Let's see. We have been singing a song about. About
Bolero?
The Party of No.
The Party of No.
Well, that's the name of it is the Right Wing Bolero. And
wonderful.
We all know what kind of havoc that the Republicans have been wreaking ever since.
Wilp, of course, is nonpartisan.
Oh, of course.
But we care about the issues.
And nothing good can happen as long as they are against everything good.
And I see they'll be coming to the White House on the other side.
That was a song of joy for the very day of the inauguration of Obama. And we sang that at a big rally in front of the courthouse. And then we marched downtown. It was such a wonderful day. We had a huge party down there, a street party that people danced
fun.
For hours.
Oh, God.
Where was
I think I was
music.
Florida.
on your website.
And now we wish he'd live up to his promises.
Yes, he could create a song about that.
We'll make it happen. I think he's still a great guy, and I think he's doing the best he can, and I'm still excited about having him there. Especially when you compare him with what's gone before. Now, but we want to sing you our right wing bolero.
But before I forget, on your website, do you post where you're singing, or do you just kind of show up?
I keep forgetting to do that. I should do that.
We post some of the tunes. We post some of the songs.
I saw. Here we go.
Bum ba da da dum 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 bum da 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 dum 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 dum. We veto everything Obama desires. It's a very simple creed. No is the only word we need. We just say no, as Nancy Reagan said, every night in bed. With a feasible bill, just shake our heads and get with the drill. We just tell them no. It's such a thrill. We mutter filibuster and they collapse. We just laugh and drink our tea. They're nuts to think we would agree. We'll sink Obama and his liberals in the oil Black Sea. Though by hook and crook their commie health plan got by, we'll wring it out until it runs dry. Some will sicken and die. Get over it. There, say we're heartless to the long unemployed. It's not true, we feel their pain. We just don't have a thing to gain. 'Cause we all know they haven't got a buck. We don't give a suck. When the very rich do well, we all get a slice. We love them 'cause they can pay our price. While the poor lose their homes, they're out of luck. We stick together 'cause we don't dare to stray. If you're tempted to desert, you're very likely to get hurt. The grand old party hates a moderate. You could lose your shirt. When you believe we are wrong, forget your scruples, follow along. We will all sing our filibuster song. No. Nay, 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 nay. No, never, 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 nay. No, 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 never more. 99999. No. No, 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 no. Yet, yet. No soap, no chance, no way, and no sweat. All for one, one for all. Now let us pray.
Oh, Metacritic. That was beautiful. That was fun. I can do this. I don't think I can sing.
You'll be a grandson.
You could try to do it. Anybody that's willing to admit they're old enough to be a granny.
And I am. I am. I have a crone.
So you're it.
Can do it. Yeah. Next time, that's why I want to know where you're singing and practicing.
Oh.
Okay.
What's this one?
We have, this is one of
I just want you to know we have 15 more minutes, so I want to hear your story, too.
Maybe I'll read that first, and then we'll end with this one, which is one of our theme songs. It's called When We're 94.
Oh, yes. Now we're going to be hearing a story, a novel that Jan Howard has been writing. I understand it's a murder mystery about the grannies.
You'll be and happy to know it's not all 300 pages. It's just a short excerpt.
And this is just sort of evolving for you. You're not sure where it's going to go.
Exactly.
It's brilliant,
I never know
I hear.
What's going to come out next. It's just fun.
And I'd just like to assure you that it's not the grannies who are murdering anyone in this book.
Sorry. I'm glad you clarified that, Margaret.
We're the detectives. See, what happened was that we played a trick on this right-wing pundit type who wrote awful, awful pro-Bush editorials in the local paper. And
we
were on the same TV show with him, and we played a nasty trick on him.
Oh, great.
And then the very next day, he died of arsenic poisoning.
Ooh.
And
tried to blame you.
No, nobody did. In fact, they ruled it a suicide. But we just didn't believe that it was a suicide, nor did his family. And so we all
started... Like so much of what we hear.
Yeah, so because of our guilt about having hurt his feelings like that, we decided that we would find out what really happened. And so that's what's happening in this story.
Of course, this murder mystery does not take place in Santa Cruz, does it, Jan?
Takes place in a wonderful little seaside town with a boardwalk called San Ponte.
Sounds awful familiar to me. A play on words, could it be? What other landmarks will we hear about?
Well, anyway, two of the grannies are Alice Ann and Katinka, two very old ladies who grew up as children together and after many years got back together to live out their last years as roommates. And Alice Ann...
Sisters.
Well, they're dear sisters, although Alice Ann is white and Katinka is black. And even when
same
they were children, they couldn't
bone.
Even go to the same school because they both came from a segregated state, Missouri. And it was segregated until a good while after they were there. So they remained friends all through their childhood, however, and played together and then got back together again in their late years after their husbands had disappeared one way or another. Okay, so they have just the day before had a very exhausting strategy meeting with all the grannies and the mother and sister of the, the mother and daughter of the man who was killed. And, so they went to bed exhausted. Starts the next morning. Alice Ann awoke late the next morning, still feeling weary from the day before, and even more worn out from her dreams, which had been more vivid than usual and extremely erotic. At 79, with what might be termed a checkered sexual past behind her, three marriages, two of them quite short, and a long period of singlehood during the height of the sexual revolution, she seldom felt a scintilla of sexual desire when she was awake. But in her dreams, that was another story. Colin, that elusive, adorable boy that she had mooned over for most of her high school days, only a couple of inches taller than she, but compact, athletic, a joy to see in his royal blue basketball shorts with the gold stripe down the sides. They used to hug the boys' bottoms and be as short as girls' panties, not those droopy things the kids wear now. His red hair combed flat with water, but a heartbreakingly stubborn little crown sticking up in back. his large, green-speckled hazel eyes and pugnacious chin, those irresistible, so kissable freckles. Nice girls like me simply did not go all the way in the early 50s, she recalled with some regret. Even the not-so-nice boys, which definitely included Colin, a big part of his charm, seldom even tried with girls like her as far as she knew. At least he hadn't. Though there was that time, one night after a class picnic, sitting in front of her house with rain sluicing down the windshield of his car, when after enough heavy kissing to make her neck ache all the next day, he had whispered something in her bad ear from a series of infections when she was small, which she couldn't hear. She didn't want to tell him she didn't hear it for fear it was tender words of love. And then he apologized for it, whatever it was. She would always wonder. In her dream last night, however, Colin had brought her to climax at least 3 times. She was still writhing in ecstasy, still moaning when she woke up. She hoped Katinka in the next room hadn't heard her. Sometimes in dreams it was Colin. Sometimes Bjorn, the married one, not, unfortunately, to her, who had made her feel almost beautiful, very desirable, and at times beloved for the 5 years of their romance, but also left her infinitely more lonely, empty, and ashamed of her part in his adultery than anyone in her life. One or two men from her past visited her, other men, with lascivious intentions, hers, in the night, but she had often thought with puzzlement her lover was almost never one of her husbands, although Sam, the first one, the father of her children, had been a wonderful lover, thoughtful and generous, who had taught her about sex, love, art, and carpentry, among many other things. She had been completely faithful to him until he left her for another more compliant woman when she was only 35. She lay reminiscing until the smell of coffee and the sounds of Katinka bustling around the kitchen, which was near her room in the tiny house, made her sit up and dislodge T.S. Eliot from his cozy spot at the foot of her bed. That's the cat.
Oh.
Big day ahead, she thought, throwing on her robe and heading for the shower. We have to come up with a plan to smoke out Leland's lover and stop lollygagging around with mine. But she was still dreamy, and as she sat at the breakfast table, eating eggs scrambled with calf brains, a barbaric dish that Kat made and that Alice Ann loved, she said, "Catty, do you ever dream about men?" Her housemaid, who had already finished her eggs and was reading the editorials, looked up questioningly at her. She studied the time-raveled face. Deep brown eyes, which had been her most beautiful feature, now almost hidden in folds of drooping skin. Gray-white hair pulled back to reveal quite large yellowish ears. Ears, she had read, continue to grow along with one's nose long after a person is full-grown. And thin, pale lips, which she could still picture as when they were young, full, and rosy red. How dear she is, Katinka thought. But she said, "Are you perhaps referring to sexual dreams, Alice Ann?" "Yes. Oh, I had such marvelous dreams last night. Don't you ever have them where your old lovers come back to take you places, like the moon and among the stars, tra-la-la, where you wouldn't even want to go if you were awake?" "Would you like me to share such dreams with you?" Katinka asked, "if, in fact, I had them." "Why not? Good grief, Kat, we've shared stories of childbirth, descended colon, extended bouts of diarrhea, vomiting, our own and many other people's. Everything disgusting you can think of. Why not our sexual dreams?" Alice Ann leaned over the table, chin propped on her hands, gazing persuasively at her oldest friend. "Because, Alice Ann, dear, if I had such disorienting, upsetting dreams, which I'm not saying I do, they would remain within my own private purview, and would never be trotted out for the titillation of others, not even yours. Katinka serenely poured herself another cup of hot black coffee and went back to reading the paper. Then she looked up again at Alice Ann, who was philosophically spreading a very thin layer of canola margarine on her English muffin, and added, "And if I yelped and moaned as loudly as you do in your dreams, I'd sleep with a couple of pillows over my mouth."
Oh, what! How tantalizing that is.
Yes, now you want to read the rest of it, don't you?
You certainly do. How many pages have you written so far?
It's hard to tell because I'm writing in big type, and
you'll have to come in and read a chapter.
But I think it's about 200 pages, as would be in a book. And I plan on 300, so I'm
getting close.
So
full of life those two are.
Well, you should see the other grannies. The other grannies are all full of piss and vinegar, too. As they explore the various clues that they have, you know, they all show who they are.
Well, we're the baby boomers, you know? And why should we fill a role of doom and gloom and...
I'm sorry, we're way beyond the baby boomers. Yeah. You're a baby boomer.
Well, you look really good.
We were the World War II.
No wonder you look so surprised.
I was born during the Depression, you know, in 1931.
Wow. And I was born at the beginning of World War II in 1940. Well, you know,
that's shocking.
My children are the baby boomers.
Yes, well, I was born during the 1930s, too.
My gosh. Well, you look really well.
Well, thank
what
you.
Can I say?
Take that anytime.
Yes, really. Yes. That's nice to hear.
Well, can I join?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Now, this one looks like she's about 35.
I know.
But she claims that she's old enough to be a grandma. I don't know why.
Well, I'm old enough to be a grandma.
I just went to my granddaughter's high school graduation.
There
and 2 years before, another granddaughter graduated from high school, and some of them are in college.
Well, good. I'm glad that makes you legitimate. We want to sing when we're 94.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The Beatles knew we were coming.
I hope that's the right key because I didn't write it down.
Do you have a key there, Cappy, do you have a key?
I think that's a little high.
Should we try
When we get older, losing our minds, many years from now, we will still be raging in our flowery hats at Democans and Republicrats. Where there's injustice, where there is greed, where there's waste and war, you better heed us, you will still need us when we're 94. We have seen it all. We've watched dictators rise to power, watch their righteous fall. Fountains of wisdom, hearts full of love, dear old grannies rule. We remember when our country was our pride, ideals for which our foremothers died. We're on the net, our iPhones are hot, grannies know the score. You better heed us, you're gonna need us when we're 94. We're not afraid of going to jail. We've been there, done that. Some of us have records long as war and peace.
We're best friends with the local police. Some of us die, but others come in. The Granny Justice Corps. You better heed us. You will still need us when we're 94. We don't sit and cry. Life's not fair till we make it so. We go out and try. Grannies are kindly, gentle, and frail till you get us riled. Marching in our walkers and our wheelie chairs, we're as fierce as grizzly bears. We'll kiss the boo-boos, make them all well, then we'll rage and roar. You better heed us, you will still need us when we're 90.
Oh, when we're 90.
Oh, when we're 94.
Thank you. Is this your, the song that basically, what's the word?
It's kind of a theme song.
Theme song. That's
yes,
the word.
Yes, yes, yes. We have another one that came to us from other granny groups, from, I think, originally from Canada.
Did you write that one, too?
No, I didn't write that
the
one.
The
We're the raging grannies singing our song, doo-da, doo-da. We're the raging grannies singing our song all the doo-da day. Gonna rage and ride, gonna stop all war. We're the raging grannies singing our songs all the doo-dah day. We're the raging grannies singing to you, doo-dah, doo-dah. Cause we want you to join our peace cause too, all the doo-dah day. Gonna rage all night, gonna roar all day. We'll bet our money on a better world. Let's get a start today.
Well, you have many theme songs.
Yes.
That's not the only one. Well, this hour has gone by so fast.
We had a lot of fun.
This is the most fun interview I've had in a long time, I can tell you that.
And about such sad things, too.
I know. Yeah. Well, you've got to get that out,
it's
and that's why I have the show. It is.
To be sarcastic about sad things.
Yeah.
Not sarcastic.
And it also...
It's a difference.
Witty.
And what's
astute.
It's
very explicit, and you bring a sense of poignancy, a sense of reality and depth to
because
it.
Because we have lived through a lot of awful, awful things.
So there's that wisdom.
We lived through
the anger diffuses
World War
it.
II. We saw the opening of those terrible camps in Germany.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yes.
And then the camps here, and then the ridiculous
Korean
history. War that's still going.
Oh, I know.
We're giving you a calling card.
Thank you. We sing it like it is. Well said. I have a card here, and it's a Wilf card as well.
And do look at our website.
The website, Santa Cruz Grannies, all one word, .com. Any
raging
phone numbers?
Raging Grannies.
Santa Cruz Raging Grannies.
Join the
I have new contacts.
Join
on.
Wilf in Santa Cruz, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We're sort of a one stop shopping political organization in that we connect the dots between peace, between water, between oil, between the economy.
And corporate greed.
Yes.
Amen.
And protecting the land as you are with the water and the air.
And we also try to have fun. That's always been part of our message.
I can tell. I'm a Leo, so I'm always saying, where's the fun? Well, here it
Guess
is in
what?
The studio today.
So am I.
In free radio. You are. When's your birthday, Jan?
Next Sunday.
Oh, now the cat's out of the bag.
Mine's August 1st. And your phone number, can they call this number too?
Yes, they sure may.
You can have them at your next event singing. 471-9992. I have to push this away so I can see it.
And we practice at Jan's house at 312 Elm Street.
Okay.
On the first and third Mondays of the month. From 1 to 3 in the afternoon.
That's all?
We'll see you there.
I know.
With the police.
I'll be away for 2 more weeks, then I'll be back. I'd love to be a part of it.
The next person who joins will probably be an undercover FBI.
Oh, God. Well, that's not me. I can guarantee you that. Well, thank you so much. I wanted to have you on for a while.
Thank you
we'll
for having
do this
us.
Again.
It was fun.
Frisch, it certainly was. Let's see. I think I'm going to play
a little bit of
Warriors on the Way will be next. Let's see. And then we'll have Joya and Monique speaking about the seventh generation and how we can guide the seventh generation, the children, the teenagers.
A dragon's eye, but light like a feather, and way across her eyes and deep in the hills, thunder is coming, echoing valley, an elven king gentle his master moves in robes of wind, and the poet on your breath sweeter than peaches, bitter as grandfather time, may slip past you in a rhythm and shadow. But it's received between the lines. Liddy, 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 hey, I hook a head. Liddy, 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 yeah. Ring them bells, child. Ring them bells, child. Ring them bells, child. Because there's no place like home, no place like home. And there's no place. Thank you.
nation born and the river running.
Angelina, bells call out your name.
Listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM and online, that's www.freakradio.org. And we're always looking for donations, and you can mail those to FRSC PO Box 7811 Santa Cruz 95061. Now, from 4 to 5, I am really honored to have my sisters and friends here with me, Monique and Joya. And someone that they just brought in. And I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Tanager.
Beautiful. Tanager. And we're going to be speaking about something that's very dear to our hearts. And we're addressing this to the seventh generation. We're very concerned about the violence that's been occurring in our community and actually throughout the world. And we're going to be talking about how we can guide, protect, and work with the seventh generation, the children, and the teens. And I want to begin by asking Monique to share what her feelings are around working with the seventh generation. We've got a mic right there for you. If you could just put it close. There you go. And this is Monique. Hi, Monique.
Hi. I just wanted to say, ho mitaki asin.
Ho.
Titi atopa. Donkashila. Thank you for this beautiful day, this beautiful life that we get to live here together. Thank you for our Mother Earth. Thank you for all of our relations. And what I'd like to extend out is the life that we're living here on this planet, that if we all could come together and live Ho Mitaki Asin, which in Lakota means we are all related. It means that we're related in all of our relations between the Star Nation and the Mother Earth. Everything in between is our relation, and we are all related together. No matter whose womb you came out of, we are all in this together. And my concern is, I have two children, 21 and 22, and I've grown up in Santa Cruz County, and so have they, and my husband, and all of my family, and when I was a young girl, it was very peaceful and very loving, and it was in the 60s, 70s, and you could walk down Santa Cruz Mall, and it was pure love, joy, and bliss. It was a community of Santa Cruz that we all came together, and now it's very unfortunate that my children are having to and have had to have experiences of the opposite of love and anger and violence, and what's going on here in our streets is war within the two-leggeds. And my prayers are for the next seven generations, that they could have peace on earth, that we could all come together with love, and that we can show this particular generation right here what I grew up with. I want to go back. I want to go back to peace, to the simplicity of unity, of humanity. And I believe that for us in this time, that we need to come from the love in our heart and not from our minds. And if we can all stand together and hold hands and pray for this next seven generations. Because what I know to be true is that seven generations ago, my ancestors were praying for me to be here. And I know that their prayers were not for me to be in this violence and anger and what's going on, and the oppression and the separation and this generation of, unfortunately, they've tuned out and there's no communication. With the internets and the iPods and all of that, the children have tuned out. They're tuned into the box and the other things. They're not tuned into humanity, into making right relations. And when I say Ho Mitake Yasin, I say that we are all related, and that I care about everybody. I care about this youth. I care about all the children. My sister is, she's creating life right now. She's pregnant. We're praying that this generation will be able to have peace and have clean water and fresh air and good food and kindness and love and enjoying their life as children and not having to go and be in fear of what's happening on the streets, and not being in, to not having to be in fear of being who they are, and that we all need to just love each other and the diversities that we bring together. I'm sitting in a room and with three other women, and we all are completely different human beings. However, I just met this beautiful young lady, and I said, please come in here and talk, because she's young, she's 19, and she just said the most beautiful things, and what she's doing is what my prayers are that all of the youth do, to create community of love. And I just want to give her an opportunity to speak, and then my sister also.
I'm Tanager, and as she said, I'm 19. I'm from Southern Oregon, and I was born in a one-room cabin with no electricity or running water, and I was raised without television. And while much of my peers are tuned into the box, as I said, there are still a huge group of us that are not. And even if we are, we recognize what that box actually is doing, or maybe not understand what the advertising is. I have no idea what commercials mean when they happen. And
yay.
I have
how exciting. Received
I've received a research grant from Willamette University to study the function of existing student cooperative housing in Oregon and California, and the feasibility of starting a student housing co-op at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon. And so the reason why my intention is to start a co-op at Willamette, and the reason why I'm doing this is because I'm looking to build, as she was saying, a community of love, but a place where we can, where
dream.
Students can live, students who might otherwise not be able to afford an education, especially at a private school like Willamette, or if they can afford the education through grants and scholarships, which Willamette University is very nice at giving out, and they might not be able to afford the living. And student cooperative housing provides an ability for students to create sustainable living. And sustainable living means not only the way that we live on this earth, but the way that we live amongst each other, sustainability and social relationships. And I'm really excited for other people my age to be older, because I think there's going to be a slight shift in the way that we view this world, that I think other people born in the late 80s and early 90s, we have some different fundamental perceptions about the way the world works. I think we know more about the way the world works, and we see that as our recognition about how our impact on the world has grown, and that we see that we make, as humans, we make a huge impact on the way this world exists. And I think that hopefully it's changing. Unfortunately, we can't, you know, me and other friends of mine that aren't tuned into the box, as you said, aren't the only ones out there. And sometimes living in the Pacific Northwest, I get a little skewed and sometimes overly optimistic perception about my generation. But I think retaining optimism is probably a key. Otherwise, you get sucked into a hopeless mindset. So
it's very encouraging to hear your words, both of you. And you're only 19, and you can have an impact. You know, that's my dream, and you represent that. You're just speaking so eloquently for the future that we want to see on this planet. You're planting seeds that were planted, and you're representing that. Thank you.
She's the flower.
She certainly
She's
is.
She's the flower.
And you were right outside the door here.
Yeah, I was waiting to interview someone here who is very influential.
I'm like, she's got to come in here because I know she's got something to say. She's saying what we feel and we want.
Yes.
And, you know, everything you just said.
So articulate. And we have Joya over here who is presently with child. And she has a son herself. And Joya, do you just want to introduce yourself? Or here's the mic.
Yeah, well, thanks for introducing me.
Sure.
I guess I'm here because I'm, you know, feeling the same exact way, bringing another child into the world. Having a young boy who's so impressionable, he's not even 13 yet, and he's got this, you know, mindset going on of how, you know, how he wants to live and where he wants to be, and it's, you know, all, it's like technology surrounding him and what he's taking in, and there's not much like positive coming in for him through that. And I would love to be able to see him enter into a place where he wants to be part of the community and build community, like in a really good way for himself and for everybody. I mean, to just, I guess everybody, like the way I live in community, I have my sisters around me. I've created this, we've created this amazing web of life together and taken so many different little pieces of the community and brought them together and just watching the circle grow. And, you know, I feel like part of that younger generation is oppositional about that, you know? I mean, at least that's what I've seen of my son. I shouldn't generalize, but, you know, for me, I want to know what I can do, what it is that I can do to help bring the children in and just really share that love, show that love with them and watch it grow. And just to bring all of the youth love and community. So that they can walk forward into the future in a good way.
And show them another world. Introduce them to different concepts when there's such a bombardment.
Well, like the real world and the
values. And having the latest iPod, iPhone, I don't even know what they are, is so important. I just don't. It doesn't interest me at all. Naturally, I'd much rather be out hiking. And in being in ceremony. And I have a hard time understanding why some of the youth don't. They're drawn so much to neon symbols and to say it, but I see violence. They lack something. It must be a gaping hole in their heart somewhere. And it's not for lack of what else is available to them. I'm at a loss as to what it's about. Want to share something, Monique? It looks like
you're
about
to. Yeah, I think that it's because we are in this time that of technology, like Joya said, and And I think that that's part of what they're, you know, where our educational program is going towards in general. So, you know, it's hard. It's a hard life, you know. It's very expensive. It's hard. It's not an easy, you know. You don't just make love and have a baby and, you know, get in a home. And it's not like that anymore. It's like it's just a lot of work, and it's this and that. And you have to have three jobs to be able to even make ends meet. And if you bring a child and this and that, and there's so much instead of just being able to be pregnant and create life with simplicity of just that, we have to do and be all of it. We have to be the mother, the father, the grandmother, because just in my generation, we had three, sometimes four generations under one roof. You know, I had my grandma and my great-grandma and my aunties and my uncles, and we were all there together. And that's where I think that we're missing is that family, and, you know, and also the extended family, which we call the Dioshpaye. You know, this is my Dioshpaye right here, you know, my extended family. And my father was adopted into a Lakota family back in the 80s when my mom crossed over and I was a very young girl. And that's where I started to really, I started to find out and feel this need of finding my own family and creating my own family, because the family that I was brought into, it was a beautiful family, but I came from a very strong line of women, but a very weak line of men. And in the struggle of trying to create that unity of mother and father and having, you know, the parents under the same roof and with creating it with love. And what I've tried to do in my own personal home is exactly that. I have a fabulous, wonderful husband. I have two beautiful, beautiful men childs, 21. It was my baby just turned 21 yesterday. Oh. My oldest is 22. And, you know, I pray for my children to have an experience of love and unity, of an experience of love and unity of humanity, mm-hmm. of this life, of this what we're doing here, you know, mm-hmm. together. And I want my grandchildren to have the same thing. I don't want them to. I wish that my children never knew about what war was or is, you know. And I think that having us be conscious of creating that just in this one, in this little teeny tiny room, you know, if we could just create yeah. that within ourselves, you know, I've created it in my family, Joya's trying, she's creating it in her family, and you know, circle. You are part of it, you know, we're all trying to do this in a community, you know, we all do it with prayer, with ceremony. Mm-hmm. I think ceremony is like a big, huge part of all of us coming together and creating that love of unity, because I think that that's part of what we're missing in ourselves is love, you know, self-love. And how do we learn that? You know, we learn it, well, sometimes we learn it at home, sometimes we don't, you know? And so I think that that's part of it, is where we're learning the love and what that love looks like. And you know, just like the gangs and what's going on, and where's the love? Where is it? Where are those children? How come those children are not, you know, they're not being told that they're wonderful, great human beings and that they're amazing, you know, and they're amazing just being who they are. They don't have to be anything more than just be who they are. I think that we've all been so unconnected to yeah. that, you know, and that source.
And so much does contribute to that disconnection, the educational system. Now, where testing is so important, and not creativity, not giving the child the time to explore their innate interests. I was fortunate when I did go to school, I had that. But now, my friends that are teachers are struggling with a test. Yeah. And they don't have time. And the children feel that pressure. Do you want to say something?
Yeah, I have a short little story about fourth grade. I was homeschooled until fourth grade.
Oh, great.
And I did. I grew up with my mother, and it was her and I in Ashland. And so she homeschooled me, and we went to the community learning center. So I did have, you know, classes of some sort with other kids. My first year in public school, I went to Walker Elementary in Ashland, Oregon. And at some point during math class, I told my teacher, can we do the type of math where you talk about your feelings? And
I love it.
And
so you knew it.
And then my teacher had me write story problems for whatever type of math the class was doing, and then the whole class would solve the story math problems that I wrote. And I ended up, you know, being able to do the type of math where we write about our feelings and still do the type of math that we do in class. And we spent about half the day, well, not quite half the day, but it's what I remember the most, playing music and singing in the classroom, even though it was a standard public school. And it is interesting to see the way the education system works.
Mm-hmm. That's where the creativity, imagination, and that's what our life is. We are imagining our life. Mm-hmm. We can create it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and find a way to support our kids in, in doing that and expressing themselves in whatever creative way it is that they're desiring.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing that, and yet we are up, I don't have children, so I don't know, but up against monetary constraints, what they're learning in school and with their peers, and then dealing with any illnesses that they may have. My nephew has ADHD and was diagnosed with that and was asked to take medication. My sister was appalled, so now she's fighting the school system, and he feels
good
less
for her.
Than suddenly.
Fight.
Oh,
fight
yes,
it.
She is.
I mean, I don't want to fight, but yeah, she's got to stand up.
She's a fighter. She will, but it's exhausting. And that's what, in trying to raise them, then the other kids laugh. Mm-hmm. Why do you have to go to these special classes? And the other one's a genius.
Yeah, and I think that's part of being diagnosed with things that, you know, I mean, all these diagnoses for all of these things. And then you're told that. Once you're told that, it's like, okay, then I'm that. But you're not that. You're an amazing human being. That, I don't know. I mean, where did all this ADHD and all this other stuff come from? I mean, it's just been like lately, and everybody's on, here, let's give them this pill. Well, why don't we just give them a lot of love and attention?
Exactly.
And let them, ask them what they want. What do they want? What does it look like for them? Do they want to draw on the walls and draw and hang from the ceiling? You know, my youngest, you know, he beats to his own drum, and he had this beautiful teacher, and I just love her. Her name was Jane. She used to take him out of class for an hour every day, and he said it was the best time of his school that he remembers. And she would take him into a room, and it was just toys. And she would just let him go crazy, climb on the walls. He'd make building blocks, and he would hang upside down. He was a climber. He's like a monkey. And that's what he remembers, having the best time, because he was free, and she gave him unconditional love and said, you're an amazing human being, because he is an amazing human being. And she saw that in him at this young age, and she let him be free of what he wanted. She didn't label him. She didn't say anything to him. All she told him was he was great. And everything that he did was great. Yeah, you know, it was him being free to be his human self. And, you know, that's what I think that we're all, I think that's part of what the whole thing is, you know, of all of us to come together like that and have that for each and every single human being, even the ones that we don't want to necessarily associate with.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that need the prayers the most. Those are the ones that need the love the most. I believe that. I really believe that.
As we stop including them, we shut down not only them, but ourselves.
Yeah, it's not us and them.
Will
come
it's out we. In some, exactly. It comes out in some other form.
Because we are all in this together. It's not about us. It's not about them. You know, it's about home at Dakyas, and we are all related. We are all related, all of our relations. If we all got up every single morning and we said, hey, every single relation, I'm talking the four-legged, the standing ones, the fish people, the winged, the creepy crawlies, every single thing that's alive on this planet, the plant people, everything. If we really had our concern of love, of nurturing everything that was around us and everybody that's around us, we would be fine as human beings. You know?
Well, it's time. It really is. I just had a woman on who talked about the time of the sixth sun in the Mayan calendar. And so the energies are going to be supporting this.
way of being where we are one, it will be supported. And anything that isn't is going to start to crumble. And it's so tumultuous now because it is still the fifth sun where hierarchy ruled, from what I'm understanding. So I am very hopeful. But the times right now do seem, appear to be dark. And it's important to put our attention on what is of value and beauty and is going to grow, continue to bring life forward in a way that perpetuates life. And it's affirming. And it's not tearing down and violent and harsh where there's so much fear, where you can't hear the little voice within, deep within the heart, mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's about
it.
The community.
We have to support that.
Like Wintree, look at Wintree. What Wintree is doing.
Wintree
is a beautiful.
You had that dream.
And I just say, you know, it's a beautiful community, and everybody's bringing, you know, there's 16 inner city children up at Wintree right now that have never been in nature. And me and my sister Joya got to go do a talking stick and an opening circle because I'm going to do a Nipi ceremony with them soon. And we just got to just put the talking stick around and introduce ourselves and just talk about a few little things. And, I told them, I said, you know, we've been praying for you. We've been praying for a long time. And you are our answered prayer. You are like a whoopila. And they're beautiful children, and their spirits are, you could see that they're so quiet, like their spirits have been trampled on, you know, and it breaks my heart, you know, because I just see them and I want to hold them and hug them and tell them that, you know, everything's going to be all right, you know, everything's going to be all right. That's what I really want to say, you know, and in my heart of hearts, that's what I want to believe, that everything is going to be just fine. We're just going to have the next human experience. And I,
together
in a good way. We all just need to come from our hearts. My dad used to tell me before we did ceremony, he used to say, honey, take off your head and leave it outside and go in with your heart, because it's your head. It's your mind is what messes everything up. So if we all can just take off our heads and go with our hearts, we'll be all right, you know? And I love this world. I do. I love my life. I live a beautiful, wonderful life. I love Santa Cruz. And there's much beauty. There's much love. There's a lot of community in here. And we have this young, beautiful girl here who's creating the community that we're all trying to do. And she's 19. We just met, like, literally 5 minutes before we came in here. And she's talking about exactly what me and my sister and everybody, we all pray for. And she's doing it. So it's like, that's an answered prayer, like, instantly. Like, spirit just brought her right here. And I want you to know that this girl is gorgeous, beautiful, blonde, just beautiful girl. And her spirit is just shining and emanating.
Like an angel.
And what she came out and she said, just like, we just, you know, I don't believe in coincidences. I believe spirit just brought her so that we can hear her beautiful, what comes out of her and what she's creating and what she's doing. So it's like, you know, we've got like two spectrums here going on, but it's all the same. You know, we could go out there and it's not so good. And then we can go right around the corner and there's this beautiful garden with new babies. So it is the world, and we're all in this diverse thing going
side
on. And of course
side.
I want it to be all beautiful. And what does my husband say? Peace, love, and granola. But I want that too, you know. I just do. I just want peace and love and simplicity.
I think we all do. And I believe that's where we're headed. The peace and the love demands the simplicity as well. It's much more complex than our minds can even begin to comprehend. And I don't think we're wired for that complexity.
Simplicity.
Yeah, a lot of our generation is very concerned with the profit motive and distracted from the idea that what concerns you is being happy and taking care of yourself. What I've loved about this summer, living out of my car, traveling to different co-ops and climbing, it's been all I have to worry about is myself and keeping myself happy. which is how I want to live my entire life, because that's really what matters. When you talk about building community and family, a lot of people my age don't necessarily want to live with their elders. And I've been home maybe...
At least not at the moment.
I've been home maybe 10 days this summer. And I love my mother. And not being home makes me love going back home. I think it's important for people to realize you can form community with whoever you are around. Yeah, I just got done spending... almost 2 weeks, about 10 days, working recycling at the Oregon Country Fair. And that is a wonderful community family of 17,000 staff that camp inside the fair. And that is a project that is put on by all of these people together cooperatively. And it is an amazing place to rejuvenate your soul and to see the younger generation. And there are the new age raver laser glow stick kids with their with their laser swords that make awful noises, but there are also
the young
fairies that skip around at the Oregon Country Fair.
The whole gamut.
Yeah, everybody. And so being there, it was wonderful to see, you know, more people who are working together and put together a cooperative community for 2 weeks. I have a pirate flag up here.
Yes, we do, a pirate radio.
So, I love it. And so, yeah. You guys were mentioning ADD or ADHD before,
yes,
and
whatever,
you know, I'm 19, and so you know, about probably half my friends or more have been diagnosed with
ADHD.
I would
have been diagnosed,
right?
With it
I could
when I
be
was...
too, right? But
because we speak out.
That's the point.
We're not afraid.
Is that it's that if we all could be, then it's not necessarily something you'd be diagnosed with. It's part of being human, and I think it's just part of being human.
Excited
in this
sometimes.
Age.
Or bored right. with something that
bored.
Is not.
Well, while I was raised without TV, I've always had the internet. And I love the internet because it's a fabulous resource, and you can use it to do a lot and find out a lot of information. There's a wealth of resources on the internet, not just pictures of kittens and porn. And so I have...
I'm surprised.
There's some waterfalls in there, too.
I have...
It's just too much time spent on it. Those violent war games, I don't even know what they are, but I've seen them.
So I have a super quick attention span. I go from one thing to another, and I operate faster if I'm multitasking than if I'm doing just one thing. And I think that's just a product of how I've been able, or been raised, or been doing things in school. And, you know, I have my laptop, and that's how I get my work done. And I think it's just how this, you know, how this new age is, and that you can use that ADHD to do a lot rather than spending 5 hours focused very narrowly on some small, you know, artistic work, which is amazing in its own right,
or
a math project, amazing in its own right. But we can also have this world where you have your laptop next to your, you know, desk computer next to your iPad, and you're doing 20 things at once, and eventually you get them all done. And so just as long as other kids use that ADHD to do what they want to be doing, I have...
then take a long hike and jump into a lake.
Yes. I'm a climber.
The balance.
And so that's my creative outlet is rock climbing. And I've been lucky to be able to do that most of my life, and so that's how I connect with the world. But yeah,
sweet. I love hearing this. Isn't this beautiful?
I do too.
I know. We just pulled her right on in. Look at Spirit just went boom. Here she goes.
I know. You're speaking for the next generation. Only 19.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
And she's gorgeous, and her eyes are on fire, and so clear. And
it's good stuff. It really is. It makes my heart really full, just because, you know, I was like, well, what are we going to talk about, you know?
And
I mean, of course, we could sit here and yap all day, but I mean, like, something really, you know, that that I would like to express, you know, and having you just be right there with those exact what we need, mm-hmm. right there. You're going to be doing what
catching
we need.
It.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you're the focus of the next seven generations, mm-hmm. and it's going to be all right, you know, because this is what it's about,
so
right here.
She's
is this
be
young one
at
here,
the center of it.
Yep. And just that you want to bring community. So that mm-hmm. means that, like, you're bringing your own Diosh Baye, you're bringing your own family together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unity
yeah.
eating and everybody being under one roof, not having mm-hmm. to worry about, you know,
where
all of the stuff.
Is,
yeah,
that doing it's, and yep. recreating the wheel, having.
Recreating the wheel,
more
tightening up the hoop.
Keeps the material system going. You have so many homes, you need furniture for it, and the expense, and then being separated, and the worry about bills. And being plugged into the system, you have to have a job, which requires a certain hierarchy sometimes. But it's, you know, it's time to not so much shatter all of it, but gently let it
fall away. One of the greatest lessons about co-ops is that by working together, you make things easier and cheaper to live on this earth. And so,
yes.
I think that's really important. And I'd warn other people around my age, and especially younger, not to get caught up in social circles and the drama and expectations associated with those.
Pressure.
Peer pressure. Or even just being in a group of friends and, mm-hmm. and somebody gets in trouble, we all have to back them. Or, somebody's mad at someone else, we have to divide into factions to remember that we're all just associations
yes.
of individuals
yeah.
that connect together
loyalties.
Into a community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very wise you are
mm-hmm.
to see that. To see beyond the misplaced loyalties and mm-hmm. assumptions about the way we need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when talking to the next generation, I'd also warn you as far as talking about prayers. I think that we're going to see an increase, not necessarily in the dictionary definition of atheism or agnosticism, but that... We're going to see people just believing in what we know about the world and what we feel about the world. And so, you know, telling people that we have them in our prayers is good, and thoughts is another way to put it
mm-hmm.
that works along lines. Closest thing to religion in my family is my grandmother is a non-smoking humanist.
Probably very similar.
But I believe in energy because that's how matter exists. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, this table is a table and it's made out of matter.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And I think we're going to see a shift in religion. And I think that's probably going to help the world. And if we don't, then, you know, who knows what will happen.
Yes. And it's sort of an earth-based way of living.
Mm-hmm.
And prayer, I have found, moves mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And it's setting an intention.
Yeah.
And it's not so much a religion, it's a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
That for me is very deep in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that's not misconstrued in
no.
any way at all. It's not Catholicism or Protestantism, and they have their place. For each individual, there are different practices. My qualm is when it's controlling how someone speaks to their creator.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the great mystery. That is that energy. We come from it, we return to it. And I think that's why sometimes we're in the situation that we're in right now. There is a lack of that awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to bring some of the ancient traditions. They worked so well when people did have that awareness. And I think it's time to start looking at it again and bringing it
mm-hmm.
home.
You mentioned the Mayas earlier, and one of my favorite things about their cosmology is that they believe in a circular time,
mm-hmm.
cyclical time,
mm-hmm.
and that this time of darkness, as you called it earlier, isn't the end, as some of those Abrahamic religions would imply, but it's really the end of this cycle, and we're about to begin a new one, the sixth sun. And reading mind creation stories have told me so much more about the way the world works than any other two pages of words could possibly.
Yes. So you know what we speak about.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel like it's like it's going to be like the end of war and anger and separation. That's what I always, you know, and I pray all the time. I'm a Sundancer. I pray with the Chinupa, with the pipe, and that's what we do. We pray for the people. We are of service to the people. When you pick up the Chinupa, for the rest of my life, I will be of service to humanity. And through that, I do a lot of ceremony of my ancestors, of prayer, from the heart, of just not an organized religion, but just a prayer from my heart for what I want to put out there, you know, for this next seven generations. I pray every single morning that they will have clean water and blue skies and just the basics that I see. I want them to see how beautiful this world is, you know. I want her to stay intact. She's our mother. This is the only home that we have, this Mother Earth right here. She is our mother, and my prayers are for her every morning. I get up. I'm so grateful that I have another day, another 24 hours of opportunity to be and do and be of service to everybody that's around me. My four-legged children, you know, and my mother-in-law who lives behind me, and she's a beautiful woman. She's 72, and, you know, to help her and be with her and love her and have all these generations, and those are my prayers, that we are all together in this together, like, you know, that I will have four generations under my roof someday, you know. That's my prayers.
Beautiful.
You know, and we've all prayed together in ceremony for many, many years, you know, and you're a Sundancer too, so
yes,
you know, you've been
to
the tree.
Back.
Yep. And so all those prayers and prayer, the power of prayer has saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
The power of prayer has brought my sister to me.
Joya.
And my sister Joya, her name is Joya, and she brings pure joy, and she's brought me pure joy. And I love her, and she's my relation. She's, and it's beautiful to see that she's going to be bringing a new generation of life, and that we get to do it with all of the love, and we get to do it with everything that we have that's around us, and these beautiful mountains, and this beautiful Mother Ocean, and, you know, of course, we're all praying for the oil and all of those birds that are out there, and all of the fish people that are being affected by it, and all of the two-leggeds, and, you know, those are prayers, too, that are going out to that, and that it all gets cleaned up, you know, and...
It's waking up a lot of people to the damage that has been done, continues to be done, enough so that... They'll probably say no more.
Yeah. It's a horrifying thing that has happened.
Yes.
However, it has everybody's attention.
Yes,
finally.
Yes,
the whole
finally.
World is having to pay attention to our
just
Mother
how
Ocean.
Precious she is.
How precious our world is. And
we can't live without.
Yeah, we can't. We can't. We this is our home. All of us. No matter how we look at each other, we have to look at each other like water, you know, with no color or no separation. If you just look at water, water's pure. You could see right through it. That's how we look at each other, you know. We
the
should look at
drops.
Each other. Yes.
Don't even say, what can I learn from this one?
Yes.
They simply blend, yet there's that individuality. We are human beings. We have a few more hurdles, too.
We do.
And work through. We're
just
we're
trying
working
it.
Through them.
We are, you know, and I think, like, I had this thing in my head, we know that more. We were going to speak more about the gangs and whatnot, and then...
We can do it again.
We
we'll
met her, and, you know, it just was brought into this...
This is perfect.
You know, about what's going on for a 19-year-old girl.
Yeah.
An American girl.
It's very exciting
to
know.
Bring it to the rest of our children, you know?
Yeah.
What makes it so that you want to be in community and live in a good way instead of constantly fighting and, you know, trying to find that individuality and that separateness from the group, instead of, like, how do I come together as part of the group and whole, and, you know,
And you too embody it well. I've been in many ceremonies and watched you two weave in and out with such grace and beauty and connection. You're bringing everyone together. They walk their talk.
That's what we want to do. We just want to...
You do. And you have fun.
We want that for our
love.
Children.
Well, we enjoy ourselves immensely.
I know it.
We do. I mean, we have some good times.
Oh,
everybody
yes.
out
they
there,
wear
let me
each
tell
sneakers,
you,
too. Remember I said, well, they look sort of alike, and yet... You've changed sneakers.
We're grown-up mamas, but we're still little girls. We still can play and skip down the road and hold hands
totally.
And pick flowers and put them in each other's hair
and
watch a sunrise and sunset, and everything's good.
And
everything's
know,
wonderful.
And know what's going on across the planet.
Yeah.
They pick it up, the two of them, and no doubt this one does as well. I forget your name. I'm so sorry.
Tanager.
Tanager's beautiful.
Named after the Western Tanager.
Okay.
I'm going to look that up when I get home.
Me too.
On the internet.
I'm not sure if that registers anymore.
Or when you walk
on my
outside.
Laptop.
Yes.
When you walk outside, you'll see my car.
Oh.
And I have a little stuffed animal tanager on my dashboard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we have to wrap it up now. We have Palestinian news coming up and then free speech news and Informativo. So I want to thank you.
I want to
so
thank you
much.
Too. Thank you so
and
much for
listeners.
The opportunity just to. Flap the jaw and whatever we need to put out there.
We need to do it again.
We will do it again.
And we'll have people call in.
Thank you for the opportunity, though. Seriously, just thank you for the opportunity to be able to speak from my heart. Just I want to put out there that I love this world and I just want to help and be of service and create peace on earth. And I say, Ho mitakias and Ho mikashka. O whoopila wishtelo.
Have her on again, and we will open up the phones. Now we're going to put on Palestinian.
Cuba con 100 toneladas de ayuda humanitaria retando el bloqueo norteamericano.
En un año más voy a ir a Princeton University.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org for Thursday, July 22nd, 2010.